I'm going to call the Robson Economic Development Committee to order.
Sorry about
I know we've had it for a few minutes late, so I know that Representative Albright has been looking at the minutes. And I'd love to move the minutes February 19th.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from our last meeting.
Thank you. All those in favor of approval of the minutes of February 19th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Approved. Next on the agenda is, we're going to jump around a little bit. Representative Dean has a, has to
you have one to do
run in and run out to the next committee. So, if Representative Dean would come to the witness table.
It's not screen.
I hear there's some technical difficulties, so I will move House File 286, Emerge Career and Technology Center Funding, bonds appropriated. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Nice to have you in our committee.
What's that?
Nice to have you in our committee. I didn't realize that you were such a golf fanatic. To keep the coffee cup on the...
Oh, that's not me. I don't know who drinks coffee. Coffee that big. I'd have to be running to the bathroom a lot if I had a cup that big.
You just need to get topless.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It seems we have some technical difficulties, so we have some wonderful images of this project, but it sounds like you're going to be looking at them on a PowerPoint a little bit smaller, so... we're introducing a project for the Hennepin County Emerge Career and Technology Center, and it's requesting $1.878 million in bonds, and it currently has a match of $4,677,000. It's a great project. It's a very old building. I know quite a bit about Emerge, but not as much as the president and CEO of Emerge, Mike Wynn. So I'd like to turn it over to him, and he'll walk you through the PowerPoint, which I believe we have a few copies circulating, and we'll get a few more to you in the next couple minutes here.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Representative Dean. And Mr. Wynn, if you'd be so kind as to identify yourself for the record and then proceed, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Wynn. I'm the President and CEO of Emerge Community Development. I want to thank you for having me here today, and thank you, Representative Dean, for that introduction. I'm really honored to be here. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties. There are some images that we would love for you to see. We do have a handout that I hope has made its way around about our project. And we're working on getting some of the PowerPoint slides to you. The purpose that I'm here is to introduce a great and important project in North Minneapolis, and that's the renovation of the historic North Branch Library. It's the state's oldest library building. My organization has conducted a very successful capital campaign to rehabilitate the building into a career and technology center. And the project, we believe, meets state priorities because it preserves this historic landmark building, an important piece of Minnesota and social and architectural history. It opens up the building to the public, and reconstructing meeting spaces and building classrooms. And it creates jobs. It creates construction jobs, and it's going to house our job training center, as well as other hosted trainings and entrepreneurship training that will be available for future and current generations of North Minneapolis residents. As Representative Dean mentioned, it's a $6.55 million project, and we're seeking $1.878 million in state bond funds. Our capital campaign has already raised the balance of funds better than a 2.5-to-1 match to this request. We have our building permit, we have Hennepin County as a sponsor, and we are ready to go. The project will restore, as I mentioned, the oldest library building. It was constructed in 1894, is widely believed by historians to be the first open shelf library in the United States. The first branch in the Minneapolis system, and it exemplified the values of its founders, such as T.B. Walker, the lumber magnate and civic leader. Throughout the remarkably untouched interior of this building are elements now found in all modern libraries that were an innovation at the time, a reading room, a children's section, public meeting space, and it was actually housed the original bookmobile garage in the building. The project creates five major public spaces plus offices and restrooms. The building rehabilitation includes new accessible entry, restroom facilities, an elevator, new HVAC and electrical systems. And there's also a rooftop solar array that we've been able to make happen. The project is a twofer when it comes to jobs. In addition to 75 union construction jobs that this project will create, the building will house an important job training center for North Minneapolis, neighborhoods where unemployment is at the highest levels in the entire metropolitan area. We are indeed able to demonstrate a significant and rapid return on investment on this project. Emerge is a regional leader in providing community-based workforce solutions. The new training center in this state-of-the-art facility will deliver a range of education and employment services from computer literacy to advanced industry training programs for adults, as well as STEM learning for young people. Each year, the project will help over 500 people gain employment and several hundred youth and adults advance their career and education skills. The program adheres to best practices in workforce training and state priorities on sector training to prepare workers with the necessary skills for the jobs in our emerging economy. Mr. Chair and committee members, we ask that the state of Minnesota join our broad list of private and philanthropic supporters, other units of government, and the Minnesota Historical Society in supporting this request. We understand the competition is fierce. The project is truly one of a kind. It's ready to go and relatively small compared to some, but certainly mighty in its impact. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm ready to answer any questions that you have for me. We also have a testimony here from the building trades, and they can also talk with us. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Would you please identify yourself for the record and state your support?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, my name is Pete Pearson with the Sheet Metal Workers Union. On behalf of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades, we do want this project. We have still had high unemployment for quite a few of the last few years. My own trade, we're probably about 22% unemployed right now, just in the Twin Cities area. So it's projects like this that makes us our careers keep going. It isn't job to job; it's a career, as you know, Mr. Chair. Hmm.
Thank you, Pete. Did you have any other testifiers, Mr. Dean, representing?
No, this will be it, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's open it up for questions. I think Representative Leidiger had a question or two.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nguyen, who holds title to the building once the project's completed? I've got a couple of questions, if you don't mind, just about this. Which, by the way, I'll tell you, I'm inclined to join on this. This is a good project. Emerge, I know, is a good organization, so I wanted to hear about a couple of things. Starting with the title.
Mr. Chair, the Representative Leidiger, yes, Emerge is the owner of the building. We have outright title to the building.
Representative Leidiger.
In terms of the union workers that are going to be, that would be working on that, is there a way that you're going to try to get people in the local area? Because where this library is located, I know where it's at. And I know that area, and it would be great if there were some local jobs. How can we ensure that, or is there a way you really can? I don't know, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Nguyen, if you, as you answer his question, maybe I don't know exactly where it is in North Minneapolis, so if you want to do a twofer.
Sure, sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger, The building is located just off the intersection of Emerson and West Broadway near North Minneapolis. And it's at, on the West Broadway corridor. Emerge has been a key partner in the redevelopment of 1890 building on the corner, and was the first our first redevelopment at this intersection, and the library became our next step. We are very active in promoting job creation and job opportunities for local residents, and we in our previous projects we've had great success in involving subcontractors and local workforce participation in our projects, and we will have an all-out effort to do that on this project as well.
Mr. Wynn and Representative Leiter, that might although I don't want to get I'm happy to get as deep in as everybody wants on this one, I will tell you that I think that would be make a next session when we have a little bit more time, it would make a great committee hearing to understand how our apprenticeship programs are reaching out to minority community, because it's always been a issue near and dear to my heart, and I've been a kind of a poke in the ribs to a lot of the building trades, so and they know it. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before. So, but I, yes. Go ahead if you've got another.
Well, question. I'm gonna change my line of questioning then. How successful is your company in finding jobs for the people that come to you? And actually, you're probably going to talk about that maybe in the future when we get down to some of these organizations. But I know that you do some placement, and some of these, and they've been very difficult to do and to have these people stick.
Yep.
In these jobs, can you give me a little idea about that? I realize it's a little off topic, but yeah. Just briefly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidinger, we have a variety of programs that work with some of the hardest to employ residents of the community, and in some places an emphasis on working with ex-offenders, a very strong emphasis on that, in helping people get into the labor force and provide the supports along the way that people need to be successful. The experience is that we place hundreds of people in jobs annually, and we have had strong success in working with some of the hardest to serve in keeping them in the workforce. And sometimes that takes an ongoing effort to people fall down once or twice along the way, and we help them get back in the saddle and back into jobs. Job development is a big aspect of what we do. Our training programs have navigation into the workplace and continued support afterwards. So that's a big part of the continuum of services that will be offered at this center, and really a continuation of work we've been doing a long time.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Newton, you have a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple of questions. First, you indicate that you own the building, and with the infusion of state money, what would happen should you go out of business, or should something happen where you wanted to sell the building? Would it revert to Hennepin County, or...?
Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, the project, the Hennepin County will hold the title once bonding were established and a lease to emerge on a ongoing okay. basis and a bond if the bond is issued. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the county would continue to hold title.
Reverend Newton, I've served on the bonding committee for a long, long time, and they've had a full meeting on this. If they are to sell the building or anyone sells the building, they have to repay the bond before
okay.
they can get a clear title for the building.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That clears it up. On the Workforce Development Center itself, two questions. Are there others in the area, other Workforce Development Centers in the area? And I know accessibility is an issue. And also, what latitude do you have in remodeling a historic preservation site?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, there is a network of employment and training services. We are not the only provider, though a core provider in North Minneapolis. There's also a state workforce center that provides a broader array to regional services for unemployment services and state special services, et cetera. This is what we believe part of a great fit to complement the Workforce Center efforts, as well as really working with a network of partners to provide services, and really a set of go-to programs that will be really compatible and complementary to what other workforce providers are doing on the north side and throughout Minneapolis.
And Mr. Chair, if I can just follow up on the you know, the work that you want to do for remodeling historic site.
The preservation question. We have worked with the National Park Service on approvals for the preservation. We've worked with the Minnesota Historical Society. We worked with the city's preservation office, and we have received approvals and have gone through that process. We are working with Bob Mack, who is a very well-known historic architect, to consult with us on all aspects of the historic preservation, and there are many considerations. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eaglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not quite sure who to address this to, but this renovation of the building for your facility and everything else, I think you've done a wonderful job with the private sources of funding and everything else, but I thought I saw a slide there that said the city of Minneapolis was in for $350,000 on this. I mean, typically this type of project and things is funded a great deal by cities through their EDAs and things like that. As a portion of the funding, that seems awfully low to me. Is there a reason for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the city of Minneapolis supported this project through its Great Streets program, which is a corridor program to make investments in distressed corridors in Minneapolis. And it is one of the larger Great Streets grants that has been made available through, you know, limited city dollars in that program area. We have, in fact, leveraged other government sources. Hennepin County, for example, $810,000, and then the U.S. Economic Development Administration. The city has worked with us throughout in sort of helping us and also sort of digging to see where they can achieve additional resources. I've been able to speak for the city in terms of their level of funding for the project, though we have continued to ask for their support for the project.
Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. A little bit of a follow-up. I mean, it would seem to me that it might be prudent to try and leverage the city of Minneapolis more, if possible. I mean, this is obviously a historically significant building for the city, too. And $350,000 seems to be a little light to me. Also, did you, with this building, retrofitting it for a computer center, workforce center, and things like that, do you have a pro forma in terms of the cost for this? I mean, this building probably has very substandard electric. I mean, it was probably built before electric was practically invented. I would imagine it would be rather difficult for some of the actual construction.
Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this requires us to do a complete retrofitting, a complete replacement of HVAC and electrical for the building. The building has been really out of use since it's had minor uses since 1979, and has a long history before that. So this is a complete revamping of those systems in the building, and requires some interesting workarounds to preserve the historic condition of the building while we do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I always loved the idea of having to work in an older building. It was one of my joys going in as a construction worker. I have a couple of questions, and then hopefully we're just going to lay this over, and we'll take a look at the bill when we get to passing all these on to the bonding committee. I have a question, two questions. Do you have a, I'm not sure what to call the fund, that would, technology goes out of fashion every 24 to 36 months. How do you replace that? What is your plan to replace the computers or whatever technology you're trying to train people on?
Mr. Chair, we have incorporated this campaign the acquisition of technology, and certainly in the life of this project, that question has changed dramatically as technology continues to advance with different tools for technology. So we're going to be acquiring the newer forms of technology, and we will depreciate those assets, which will allow us to expense the cost for renewal of our technology costs in the future. So when it comes time to replace them, we will have depreciated reserves, okay. Depreciation reserves to allow us for replacement.
And then the second question is, I don't know what slide, but it's on page 2 of your handout. It's the jobs now, jobs later. The last bullet point says over 500 hard-to-employ citizens placed in full-time jobs each year. Is that what you do now, or is that what you expect to run 500 new job trainees through your program at the library? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, the 500 is the number we estimate to where the services based at the center, some of which are existing today and others which are new, that new training projects that we'll be offering will be able to, that will make happen at the center. We anticipate Emerge will work beyond that level, but that's our estimate of the programs that will be based at the library and the trainings that we'll be offering there.
And just as a word of advice, hopefully you'll track those people and track your results and be able to come back. And if someone called you and said, yes, we actually employed 500 people at living wage jobs and they're still working at them a year, 2 years, 3 years later. Representative Fabian, you have a question or two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wynn, I'm curious, you said something about on the roof, a solar array. Can you explain what a solar array is, please? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have been able to add into this project the solar panels on the roof of the building that will enable us to actually support the energy use in the building, at the same time provide a training lab for students in training programs. So we are able to leverage some support to make that some specific support to make that happen, and that's enabling us to have solar panels on the roof, and it will help offset the energy costs of the building while providing a training.
Well, if you were looking for the technical part of the solar panel, I think you'd have to call a friend. But further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you said leverage in that short presentation. You said you're able to leverage other sources of whatever for this. Can you explain that, please?
Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are able to utilize state tax credit opportunity to acquire solar panels that we've been able to install on the building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what do you estimate the cost per kilowatt of solar electric generation?
Mr.
Mr. Chair, I would say it's above my pay grade.
All a friend would be between 8 and 10 cents a kilowatt.
Okay. Then one last question.
We do, Mr. Chair, Representative, we do have an analysis of that. I'm unable to provide you with that today. But
Representative
we
Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you talked about gaining jobs, 500 jobs. Where would those people gain employment? Where are they going to be working?
Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have worked with a number of industry partners. A good example, we have a very involved jobs advisory and as well as job development efforts. And a good example is our property maintenance technician training program, where we're working with a group of multi-housing providers who employ people as maintenance technicians in property. And we've trained people for a number of years as technicians, and we're very excited to be able to expand that effort as a result of the training center here. And it's been a career track that's been very successful to move people who are relatively low skill into a higher level of occupation in a fairly short training input period of time. So an example, and we count that there are several hundred employers that we work with annually.
And Mr. Wynn, if you just look at your private fundraisers, you could probably go to United Health, Wells Fargo, the Bremer Foundation, Thrivent Financial for Lutheran, I think they got a new name now, General Mills, Deluxe Corporation, Target. You might be able to place a couple of them, one or two there. Do you have another question?
No.
So, members, unless there's any other questions, I'm going to move to lay this over for possible recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a good afternoon. Appreciate your time here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Gunter, you have a bill up. Representative Gunter, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Twin City Rise is a program that has been before this committee for quite a few years. The significant differences between this and most other ones is this is an outcome-based program. They get paid only about successfully placing someone in a career in a livable wage job that have been there for 12 months. So they place somebody there 12 months later. If they're still there and still successful, they get paid for doing it. I know of no other program like this. It is a program that builds careers, empowers lives, and ends poverty. So this is one that I really wholeheartedly support and always have under many chairmen of this committee. This is a program that was started by Mr. Bierman, who was an executive with Ameriprise Financial, and it was started by somebody who was General Mills.
Steve Rothschild.
Steve Rothschild from General Mills to begin with. These people interrupted their careers to help basically black African Americans that have had problems and didn't have jobs, and they train them. And like I say, I can't say any more, but this thing, they don't get paid unless they do the right thing. So with that, I would like to have Mr. Bierman first.
Sure.
Describe his program.
Before you start, Representative Gunter, would you like to move your
I would like for to move this bill
to hold over for possible inclusion for recommendations?
That's correct. In your omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Gunther, and thank you, Chairman Mahoney, and thank you all committee members
for giving us time to share our program with you today. And we're delighted to be here, and we look forward to taking your questions. My name is Art Berman. I am president and CEO of Twin Cities Rise. I am here today with my colleague, Mr. Tony Blakey, who you'll hear from in a few minutes. And we'll share some key aspects of the program with you. I've had the opportunity to meet with many of you, and I've shared a lot of information with you, taken a lot of questions, and we've also given you, just as a refresher, a one-page handout, which hopefully you have handy, which looks like this, just as some key facts of the program. I'll give a quick overview. Just to set it up, Minneapolis and St. Paul have the largest racial employment disparities in the country. Of the top 50 metropolitan areas in the country, we have the worst. Twin Cities Rise is working effectively to change that picture. We have offices in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we serve adults living in deep poverty in the Twin Cities and the inner ring suburbs. What we do is we have a 12-month intensive work skills and personal development training program. Everybody in the program not only gets the skills training, but has the benefit of a full-time coach. The coach is responsible for meeting with his or her participants once a week, as long as they're in the program, and for up to 2 years after they leave the program. So it's a very high-touch program. It's quite intense, and it works. The people we serve, last year we served over 600 adults in the Twin Cities. These are adults in deep poverty with high barriers to employment. 85% of them come to us unemployed, most of them long-term, chronically unemployed. The barriers, nearly 75 to 80% of them have criminal histories. 50% of them have addiction histories. Most of them have or have had unstable housing. So this is a population that is challenged and needs some support to get back on track in their lives. Demographically, a majority are African American, a majority are male, but we are an open enrollment program. We serve poor people, any poor people who walk through the doors and who could use the support and training of Twin Cities Rise. We are very intentional about defining, measuring, and reporting on success. And we have some success metrics that we've shared with you. The single most important success metric for a program like ours is job retention. Most programs are pretty good about helping people get jobs. Not that many programs are good about helping people get the skills they need to keep the job for the long term. Our one-year job retention rates last year were 82%. Now, that compares to a benchmark group that the city of Minneapolis study did of our work skills training peer group, and the one-year retention rate for our benchmark group was 60%. Even our two-year retention rate is over 70%. We measure change in income. The average starting salary for graduates of our program last year was $25,000 a year. That compares to essentially nothing when they come into our program. We also measure return on investment. We've determined, with the state's help actually, that success at Twin Cities Rise in terms of getting that full-time job and keeping it has a value to state taxpayers of $55,000 in net present value terms. That value is created because the people come through our program and succeed, come to us, they're on public assistance, they're no longer on public assistance once they get the job. They become taxpayers. And when you succeed at Twin Cities Rise in getting that job, if you have a criminal history, you do not reoffend, and there's a measurable savings to our criminal justice system. The ROI that we've measured for our participants is the basis for the program that Representative Gunther introduced. That is our pay for performance model. We've had this with the state for over 15 years, and it has really worked. It has worked for the state, for state taxpayers, it has worked for the people that we serve, and it has worked for the poorest communities in our area. And as Representative Gunther said, I'm not aware of any other program that is funded on a pay-for-performance basis, meaning we have to demonstrate success before we actually get reimbursed out of the appropriated funds from the state. So that holds us accountable, and it assures the state of a high return on investment. At this point, I'd like to just turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Boyke. And yes?
Mr. Irvin, just a moment. There was a question. Did you have one for in the middle, or can you can wait? Thank you very much.
Okay. And I'd be happy to take questions whenever you'd like.
At the end.
Okay, great. Let me just introduce Mr. Blakey. He's a work skills coach and instructor at Twin Cities Rise. He has a unique perspective on our organization. He actually came to us as a participant many years ago. So he's been through the program as a participant. And then we hired him when he graduated to be a coach and instructor. So, and he's been with us as a full-time employee for about 4 years now. So he has a special perspective that I think you'll enjoy hearing from. So, Tony?
Mr. Blakely, if you would be so kind as to identify yourself with a tape and proceed.
Sure, Mr. Chair. My name is Tony Blakey, and I would like to thank all of you for allowing me to be here with you this morning to share my perspective on Twin Cities Rise, one as a participant and another as a staff member. I also would like to preface this with saying that I want to thank all of you in advance for your patience and your active listening, as this is not a normal occasion for me, so there's a high level of nervousness that exists right now. however, at Twin Cities Rise, we promote feeling the fear and doing it anyway. Being able to move outside of what is comfortable allows you to grow. So if there's anything that is unclear, please do not hesitate to ask for clarity. As I move forward, I just like to give you a little background on me. I am originally from the Rondo community. I grew up exactly six blocks from the Twin Cities Rise site located on Lexington here in St. Paul. As I grew up, in poverty, which came clear to me at a later age or state in my life, but I viewed it as protective poverty because I grew up in a single-parent home with my mother and with my sister, but my mother did a very good job of shielding the fact that I was, or we were, living in poverty just simply by her work ethic and making sure that the things she did translated into just how much she loved her children. An unfortunate side to that is that at an early age, I also witnessed my parents go through a divorce. And out of that divorce, I also witnessed my father move directly across the street from my mother and my sister and I with his new family. His new wife, who just so happened to be my mother's ex-best friend. A half-sister who was a year older than I was. And then a half-brother who was the same age as my younger sister. So out of that, and witnessing my mother struggle to provide for my sister and I, while also recognizing that my father and his new family were seemingly or apparently living in prosperity, I grew very bitter. I grew angry. And I developed an almost reckless disregard for other men as a result of my experience. Because of this, I also felt that some of it maybe was my fault. You know, so I would question myself. I also had feelings of rejection, and I dealt with this for quite some time. But again, as a result of my experiences, I became very violent. I had this complex about myself that I was not going to be disrespected by anyone for any reason, that I would not put up with anything. And the slightest thing would take me into a tailspin of just almost blind rage And from that, I found myself in quite a bit of trouble. I fought quite a bit, but I didn't have the tools nor the skills to understand that I could control my emotions. And because of that, at some stage in my life, I found myself with a criminal history. Got convicted of a felony for a violent offense. Ended up spending some time incarcerated. Got out of incarceration. Found myself still not making positive decisions or choices, which ultimately I found myself being extradited from Minnesota back to the original place where I was convicted of my felony, in shackles, feeling less than human. Eventually getting out, and after all of that, finding myself to be homeless. Homeless in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I eventually did make my way back to St. Paul, Minnesota, where I'm originally from. Still homeless, wandering about, without any direction, not certain where my life was going to end up. I had, on several occasions, applied for different jobs, and actually did get job offers. But weeks after starting the jobs, after the background check would come in, the line was always, "Mr. Blakey, we do apologize, but we're going to have to rescind our offer of employment because of your criminal history." I never saw myself as being a criminal, but unfortunately, individuals who have made similar mistakes are looked upon and aren't always allowed to move forward and prosper in their lives. So I got to a point where I knew I wanted to do something. I had to do something. I was tired of being homeless. And I was almost at a point of just throwing my hands up in the air and saying, you know, this just is not working. What's the point of being here? Meaning being here alive on this earth. I can't provide for myself. I have two small children. I can't provide for them. What's the point? Maybe things would be better off if I were not here. So I can't say that I had gotten to the point of just simply throwing my hands up and saying I want to take my own life, but I simply did not know how things were going to turn out or if my life would change at all. I decided to make one last effort in finding some sort of training, some sort of help with finding employment. So I called to a particular program and asked them about gaining entrance into that program. And I was told, because I had not spent enough time incarcerated, that I would not qualify for that particular program. I said, okay, well, here we go again. I'm trying to make a difference in my life, yet I'm not going to receive the assistance I need. So at that point, I went to hang the phone up, but the gentleman said, hold on a second. I want to refer you to another program that might be able to help you. That program just so happened to be Twin Cities Rise. So I went in, I went through an intake process, I was admitted into the core program, and I began Twin Cities Rise in October of 2007. At that point, I still had no idea what I was getting myself into. Wondered whether or not, okay, is this just another program that talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk? Well, I found out as I began my journey at Twin Cities Rise that Twin Cities Rise was truly a program that based itself on being an empowered program. It provided an empowered atmosphere, one where they taught individuals, especially me in particular, that we are important, valuable, and lovable individuals, that our lives are of significant consequence, that we have worth, that we have value, and that if we're only given an opportunity, that we would make valuable employees for employers. So as I went through the program and really started to understand what Twin Cities Rise was offering, I started getting really interested in becoming a part of the staff. And the support that I got once I made this known to my coach at the time and other staff members was really amazing. They didn't say, well, you know, you really don't have the background that supports coming in and working for Twin Cities Rise. They sat down with me and helped me to come up with a plan of action to achieve that goal. And ultimately, I moved into an internship with Twin Cities Rise at the front desk. Now, Twin Cities Rise, we really promote individuals preparing themselves, because opportunities will come. But the difference between a positive and negative outcome is whether or not you're prepared. So I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and thankfully, through my training and participation with Twin Cities Rise, I was prepared for an opportunity that was presented to me. And that opportunity through that internship was an opportunity to become part of staff at Twin Cities Rise. And I chose to take that opportunity because I knew that through the training I received at Twin Cities Rise, I would be able to give back to my community. I found myself as a youth and as a teenager taking so much from my community and being violent and acting out in ways that were not appropriate, that it was time for me to give back to my community. So as I began my journey as an employee at Twin Cities Rise, Twin Cities Rise is also a program that promotes continued learning. And it's not just about getting into a job or having an end to a means, but it's about sustainable employment and really growing to achieve maximum success in your life. So what they allowed me to do, or really asked me to do, was to become a coach in training. So I transitioned from a front desk administrator to a coach in training. Once I went through that process, I also went through the process of becoming an empowerment facilitator. Okay, empowerment meaning having the ability to increase one's capacity, control their state of mind internally, which also allows individuals such as myself to make decisions that are based on my positive self-interest, whether it be for the short term or the long term. And being in this newfound situation with Twin Cities Rise, I knew that being there and being able to contribute and give back to my community was in my positive self-interest and would allow me to grow. One of the other things about being on staff at Twin Cities Rise and why the program is such a special program is that individuals who come in understand that Twin Cities Rise is really transparent about their process. There's nothing that is hidden. We are already up front with individuals about the possibility of moving from their current situation into a situation where they are in sustainable employment. And we really work with individuals to develop their soft skills, which ultimately help them to retain employment, but also their hard skills that speak to their ability to get an interview and ultimately get a job. We also work really hard with individuals to develop an individual development plan that helps them to move from just a concrete state of being, but to one where they are starting to think abstractly, which ultimately helps them to plan, not just for the now, but to plan for their future, which is very important. And most individuals who come to the program have not had exposure to something like that. So we really work hard with them to develop that plan and set in place steps for them to achieve the goals and the things that they want to achieve for their lives.
Mr. Blakely?
Yes.
We're going to try and get another bill in today, and I'm sure there's questions. I know I have a couple. So if you could just, I understand why you're an empowerment speaker, because I'm sitting here on my, actually kind of enjoying it, as opposed to some of the other testimony I've heard over here. But I'm going to have to ask you to hurry up.
Sure. In the beginning, I said I was very nervous, but I think I'm starting to.
Yeah, you're getting
loosen up just a little bit. I do apologize.
No.
Again, thank you for your patience. But I really just want to, again, thank you for this opportunity and, you know, say that I really hope that, you know, you guys continue to support Twin Cities Rise. It is a fabulous program It is a program that really helps individuals not just, well, I'll put it this way. We don't just give people fish so that they're fulfilled for that day, but we help them to become fishermen and fisherwomen so that they can ultimately fish for the rest of their lives. Twin Cities Rise is not a program just that gives a hand out. We're there to give a hand up. And participants take personal accountability and responsibility for their own success. We are there as a driver in a car to help them to reach their final destination. And with that being said, it is, again, a great program. I've benefited greatly. The community benefits greatly from the success that the participants have. And I really want to ask you, will you support Twin Cities Rise in its efforts to help people to gain livable living wage employment and just to sustain their lives?
Thank you, Mr. Blakely. I'm going to start the question here because we have a lot of new members on the committee, and they may or may not understand. Twin City Rise has come before the committee 7 times. I mean, I think since the inception of Twin City Rise. Last year you went into the... So this is a question for Mr. Berman.
Yes, sir.
last year you went into the competitive grant pool.
Yes.
And I think the competitive grant pool off the top of my head was a little over $1 million. And you applied for what? And you received what?
Okay. Yes, we were one of 60 organizations applying.
60
for
organizations.
Grant.
Yep. For $1 million.
The guideline was what the guideline for the maximum award was $400,000. We applied for $400,000. I think DEED was a little overwhelmed with how many applicants and how many good applicants they had. Their maximum award they made was $300,000, and we received $300,000. So we were one of 5 organizations that received the maximum award made by DEED through that process, but it was at $300,000.
And then I have one other question, and then I'm going to open it up. What's your typical cost per client that you serve? Is it $1,000 or $10,000 or?
Yeah. As I said, the program lasts about a year. Mm-hmm. It's quite intense, high touch, coaching and everything. It's about $10,000 a year for the full program for an individual. So that compares to, and quite frankly, relative to other programs that do what we do, we are a more expensive program. But what we focus on is what do you get for that investment of $10,000, and that's where the $55,000 and the return, the sustainable skills for employment, that's all about return on that investment.
Well, I will break my own rule and go with one more statement. A $10,000 or $12,000 cost per client versus the cost of a young man or young woman going back to jail at $15,000, $20,000, $35,000 a year.
$35,000.
Well, that's just in Minnesota.
Yeah.
We're being broader here.
Okay.
But, yeah. It's not a bad investment as compared to some of the other investments we've made in our lifetime here. So are there any other questions? Representative Ugham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Representative Metza.
Who is first? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony today. Representative Gunther, you've got a great ask here. And I just want to more give you a challenge. Ask for more next time. I think, you know.
He did.
and one thing on top of that, expand it into rural Minnesota. I would love to find a proposal for my region of the state that was working in the same, parameters that you do. And I'm just, after reading the information you brought to the office and hearing your testimony today, very impressed with, you know, all the work that you're doing. And, you know, I think if we, I don't think we would fight so much if all government programs that we were funding were running this way. So thank you.
Thank you very much for that invitation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to say some of the same things. To have an outcome-based program here and a pay-for-performance-based program, we're new guys on the committee. We've seen a number of requests come through already, but this is by far the best. I can see that it was put together by a person that was in private enterprise, because obviously your return on investment is fabulous, and I would like to see. I think this is a wonderful business model for helping the communities. And again, yeah, it can be taken out state, greatly expanded, and there's real bang for the buck here. It's not money just going down the hole here. It really shows what can be done with leveraged money. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good program. I would like to see it, and maybe you guys already do this, to start to get into your community high schools where you'll be able to identify some of these high-risk guys, mostly guys, some gals, and try to
You wouldn't want to be
prejudiced or anything.
No, prejudgment.
Yeah, that's right. But just, you know, because what we're talking about here is investing so that we save money in the court system and the jails, and that's what we want to do is get everybody independent, living on their own, taking care of their family. That's great. It sounds like with your experience that you would understand, be able to identify some of these kids in the high school, and, you know, that's another whole topic, but I'm on public safety, too, so I get this whole broad thing, and I love Second Chance Coalition. We talked with Art about that, too.
Yep.
But just, you know, just food for thought. If you do expand, if you're getting in there, that I'd love to see this move into the high school age kids to prevent it even sooner down the road.
I think that's...
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Representative Kiefer. That's great feedback and great suggestion. We actually, and some of you may know this, we deliver the personal empowerment part of our program that Tony referred to. We actually offer that program to a lot of other organizations, nonprofits, for-profits, and we've had a program in the St. Paul Public Schools. More recently, we've done a program, pretty intense program at Harding High School in St. Paul. So I agree with you. We would love to do more of that. And it does help, and it really works.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. And one of the members, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion. But the other thing I wanted to make sure members realize is that the competitive grant program was funded at a level that probably wasn't well enough funded in order to meet all the needs from the organizations like this need. So. With that, we'll lay this over. I do thank you for coming. You're an inspirational group and organization, and hopefully if the competitive grant moves forward, we fund it at an appropriate level that it can actually work better. There's some issues with that we'll talk about as a committee a little later. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. And Word, I think you are up next. And you have an old colleague as a witness. Yes.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Representative Ward, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move my bill, recommend passage of the bill, and move it on to taxes.
The taxes?
Okay. That's
thank you,
correct.
Thank you, Representative Ward.
And I have an amendment, Mr. Chair, but.
If you've moved your bill, you can move your amendment, and we'll get it in the shape that an author would like.
We
all have the amendment. Before you move the amendment, does everyone have the amendment?
Yep.
The A2 amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
You know, it's in my own file. No. I'm pretty sure I got it here. Yes. Does everyone have the A2 amendment?
Yes.
You'd like to move your amendment?
I'd like to move the amendment, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to explain a little bit, or members? Or I'll explain a little bit, Mr. Chair.
I don't think you need to to do the amendment if it's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like.
Very good.
And then you can explain it as you explain your whole bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So all those in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
In the shape that you want. Or opposed? Please proceed, Representative Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, Mr. Chair, members, thank you. This is a bill, members, called the Greater Minnesota Job Training Program Tax Credit, brought to me by the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and Mike Miller has joined me today, and we're going to have some testifiers. So I'm going to be pretty brief on an explanation of the bill, members. The new Employee Job Training Program Tax Credit is one of the top complaints in Greater Minnesota businesses is that the difficulty of finding employees with the necessary skill sets for 21st century jobs. The new Employee Job Training Tax Credit Program, members, will provide employers with money for training programs. It's a $20 million initial appropriation for the program, $10 million per year for the $20 million over the biennium, and it more than offsets by state revenues collected through payroll withholdings of the newly hired and trained employees. This provides the employee with a job that would not have otherwise existed. It allows employers to hire employees that can make an immediate impact and grow businesses in Greater Minnesota. Just a few more points, members, and then I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers. More about the program. To qualify for job training funding, a business must be expanding or locating in Minnesota or locating in Minnesota for the first time as far as locating in Minnesota. The business must be located outside the metropolitan area and create new jobs. Filling openings of pre-existing jobs does not count, members. A deed approves the process, the deed approves the new job and cost and training method that employer will use and verifies that no other training program fits the employer's needs. The new employee must be paid at least $13 an hour plus benefits by the end of 1 year and must be employed at least 32 hours per week. Once a contract is signed by deed and the employer pays for the training. The employer is then reimbursed as new tax withholdings accrue, either with a grant from deed or a tax credit from the Department of Revenue. The credit or grant is funded through the tax withholdings of the new employees. The business may not collect more money in training credits from the state than the withholdings of the new employees' taxes over a 10-year period. The employee quits, business closes, no more credits or grants from withholdings may be offered. Again, members, it's a $10 million per year appropriation ask, $20 million for the biennium. And members, why is that important to like my area in particular, Central Minnesota? I think you've heard me in the past indicate that up in the District 10A in the Brainerd area, Nisswa, Pequot Lakes area, we have some of the highest unemployment in the state of Minnesota. Actually, the city of Brainerd, members, the city of Brainerd has the highest unemployment rate going on 10 years straight, excuse me, going on 6 years straight, and is number one in the state. It's number one that we don't want to have. But this was just in our paper recently, and it just shows the last decade of December unemployment as some of the highest as the highest unemployment in the state of Minnesota. However, our manufacturing business is exploding. And I share that one and two distinction with Representative Purcell as some of the highest unemployment in the state as well. But our manufacturing business is exploding in my district. The biggest problem is they don't have the skill set to match up with the what they need. So this program is to allow that. It's to allow an employer to train an employee in a new job and make an immediate impact on that business. And members, for some reason we didn't get in some letters that support this program. Klaus Stapping up in Merrifield, Minnesota. Reggie Klaus is on notice that he strongly supports it. I've got a letter from the mayor of Brainerd along with the city council president supporting it. And you're going to hear from some economic development and a mayor as well about why they support it as well in their areas. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifiers, Dan Dorman, who some of you I know from this body, and Bob Broder. Bob is the mayor of Le Sueur, and Dan is the economic development director, and Albert Lee. And then I think we'll also might have some testimony from the Teamsters, maybe, and from the disability community as well. Mr. Chair?
Representative Ward, we have about 22 minutes left, so a couple minutes each would be just fine.
I think the mayor will be brief, but, you know, Dan is a former state legislator, so I can't guarantee that, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I've listened to a couple of speeches by Mr. Dorman.
Rarely have an opinion. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I happen to be a retired clergyman, so I don't guarantee that.
Please identify yourself.
Yes. I'm Robert Broder, the mayor of Le Sueur, which is a community on 169, if you're not familiar with it, in the belly of the Jolly Green Giant, if you've gone down that way. I came here to speak on behalf of the city and on behalf of the economic development organization in our community. But as I listened to all these different testimonies that have been being shared this day, and thinking about all your positions as elected individuals and mine as elected individuals, we all have a job, at least for the time being. And the aspect I'm thinking about, all the folks that we're really talking about who don't have jobs. And one of the, this bill is to address that, or try to help to address those concerns. I think about a number of industries in my community who wish to expand or are expanding. One of those being a company called Cambria, which you may be familiar with. It's in the process of expanding and also maybe with some assistance from this body and state will expand even more to as many as 500 new jobs. But the concern that I hear is that they may have bodies and abilities to fill these positions, but they don't have the skills. And as we all know, that every company that has their own way of doing something, you can go to school or you can go to the number of years that I went to, but when you got into a particular church, they had their own ways of doing stuff. And so it is a process of learning how to develop those skills that company's desires. Also, it sets that, you know, and with unemployment, and we all want to encourage, I know, the economic development of the state, is that there's a number of folks who are maybe 40 years old, but they no longer have the skills or the technological abilities which are required by industries, and they need to be trained. And companies that want to expand, want to make sure as they expand that they're also going to be able to break even, and they have the people and the resources to do it. This bill, I believe, will help do that. It will allow companies as they expand to garnish in the people with abilities, but without the talents, and to help train them so that they can be a productive part of that business and have jobs which enhance not only my community, but many communities of greater Minnesota. And as I fully realize with the work that you all do, that we all want to help the economic development of the state, not just one particular locale, but the entire state, so we have a whole state that's vibrant. I think that's enough.
Former Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Always good to have a colleague back here. We try to treat them with respect, but with you, we'll make an exception.
I wouldn't, and would be somewhat surprised if you didn't. So, first of all, I want to point out I'm not wearing a bulletproof vest. It's a back brace. So,
I just want to point out that most of the colleagues on this committee never served with you, so you're lucky.
They're lucky. Not go over the same things, but... I think that a couple things come to mind that I think are important about this. The flexibility of the program is important. It can be a large employer, it could access it, a small employer. Coming from somebody down the Iowa border, You know, the thing I can tell you is we compete often for jobs that end up, makes us feel bad. We're a lot of times the last city in Minnesota standing, and we watch something slip away to South Dakota or Wisconsin or Iowa or Omaha. And it is an ice taxation. I mean, it's you know, you hear the guy on the radio from South Dakota, you'd think that's the only dog in the show, but it really isn't. Iowa's got some effective programs. One works a lot like this that we can't offer, so when we go to compete with them, we have a hard time making that case. So I think that that's an important thing to know. The second thing, and usually isn't a question, so I'll try to answer it first, but, you know, why Greater Minnesota only? Why limit it? And you see that in various bills. And I think the reason, the best reason, is we don't have, you know, Albert Lea or wherever it is, we don't have the population mass to come up with something like a Twin Cities Rise or the different things that are available in the metropolitan area to help train employees. We wish we did. You know, we can't jump on an MTC bus from Albert Lea and get there very easy, you know. So what we do has to be with someone's help, can't do it alone, but has to be some assistance from the state or federal government to help us train these employees. And it's correct. The number one thing I do here when I go out and meet particularly with manufacturers is, you know, sort of, if you recall right before 2007, it was, where are we going to get qualified, you know, fill in the blank, from teachers to machinists? And, you know, we're not too far from that again. And I think that that's going to be a challenge that we face as a state, not just in the short term, but I think in the long term, even through the economic cycles that we'll go through, that the trained workforce is going to become more and more important. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll cease. Shocking.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dorman.
Go whenever you want.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. Miller want to make, I think the folks, there's a section in the bill, remember, to the amendment, there's a section in the bill that if an employer hires an employee that is disabled, there's an additional $1,000 that will be reimbursed to that employer. And the purpose is because, you know, our disability community is also some of the highest unemployed folks in the state of Minnesota. So I think the disability community wanted to say a few words, Mr. Chair.
Aren't they approaching about 60%? With the disabilities?
Right. Hi. Joan Wilshire, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. We're one of the five state councils. We're an advisory agency to you folks, the governor, you know, state agencies, and the public regarding disability issues. Employment is certainly one of the areas that we work on amongst a variety of other areas. And so I'm just here to give you some of those good facts that you're asking about here, because this is an important amendment for us. Because currently in the state, you can consider 20% of the population having a disability. Now, looking, I know a current Minnesota unemployment rate is around 5.5%. When you're looking at the U.S. data on the unemployment rate for people without disabilities, we're looking at 7.9%. Now then, looking at U.S. data on unemployment rate for people with disabilities, it doubles, 13.7%. Overall, the disability labor workforce participation is currently 20.8%. So you can see we're looking at around 80% unemployment rate for people with disabilities nationally. In Minnesota, we don't have stats just specifically for Minnesota, but Minnesota is right in there with having huge, high unemployment rates for people with disabilities. And just some other data to show you just how poor the population of people with disabilities are. People without disabilities living below the poverty line in Minnesota are at 9.1%. People with disabilities living below poverty line in Minnesota is at 25.3%. So again, it doubles. We are the poorest of the poor. And so you can see that, you know, just our stats alone, that it's pretty dismal for our unemployment rate. So what we're hoping by suggesting that this amendment go through is it would encourage employers to hire people with disabilities and provide competitive employment opportunities as well, and just increase the number of business champions. That's really what we need out there, just someone to give us a chance out there in the community to help, you know, create those good jobs. And so this is really, I think, a good step for us to go, because people with disabilities can and want to work, and it's the time to get us in as taxpaying citizens.
And Mr. Chair, I just ask the Teamsters to also weigh in on it as well, from a perspective of labor as well.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Ed Reynoso with Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent 62,000 active and retired Teamsters across the state of Minnesota. I could come here and list dozens of reasons why we're supportive of this bill, but I know for the sake of time, just simply stating that we are in full support of this bill. We believe this thinking out of the box. We are ecstatic that Representative Ward would bring something such as this forward and creating this new avenue of money grant process to create new jobs here in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Noso. We had a question from Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ward, I've got questions about the bill a little bit. If I heard you correctly, you said that you had to work 32 hours a week and then at least 9 months out of the year. Can you explain to me why you wouldn't want to work in full-time 12 months out of the year?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Ward.
We do.
Okay.
We do. Yeah. But the minimum standard to be eligible for the program is a minimum of 32 hours a week and $13 an hour after 1 year. And we hope that it's 12 months. But the other thing that it would address as well is some seasonal employment as well. So there's some businesses that are pretty much seasonal that would also be eligible to during their seasonal operation be eligible for this program as well. So that's really why if we had 12 months and it's a seasonal occupation of only 9 months, then they wouldn't be eligible. But with 9 months they would. But again, Mr. Chair, we'd like 12 months full time for all of the new employees.
Representative Fabian,
thank you.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair. Of the $20 million that you're talking about, and I don't know if anybody is here from DEET or not, but what are going to be the administrative costs, and of the $20 million, what's going to be? Okay, my neck doesn't turn that. I'm not an owl. I'm just curious to know what their reaction is to your plan, and of the $20 million, what's actually going to be used to create jobs, and what's going to be used in
That's a great, Mr. Chair, and I'll address it, and Deed can come down and correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am. We've got a preliminary fiscal note.
Yep.
And the preliminary fiscal note shows about two full-time staffers from Deed to administer the program at a cost of around $180,000, I think, or something on that nature, and then administrative costs in the program in the years 14, I think it is, of $5,000, and then 12, I think, the next year, and 17, the year after that. So I think that answers your questions, and it looks like I'm going to be corrected right now. So,
yep. Representative Ward, there is a preliminary, fiscal note, but let's hear from Ms. Babine. Please identify yourself for the tape. Is this your first time testifying today?
Second.
Second time. Okay, good.
Please be kind.
You're not a rookie any longer.
Oh, no. I thought I could use that a little bit longer. Kim Babine, Legislative Director at Deed, and I am not here to correct you. Representative Ward just wanted to clarify that, yes, we have a preliminary fiscal note that does identify the two full-time staff people to administer the program, and the costs that we identified are the cost of those people and operating expenses that go along with it. So part of the bill does say that there is a fee that is charged, so that helps recover some of those costs. So the costs that we show are $5 million. I'm reading that incorrectly.
$5,000.
$5,000 in 15, 12, and 16, and 17, and 17. So those are just the deed costs.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward.
Thank you for bringing up the fee for every applicant as they apply, as the employer applies. There's a $500 fee to fill up, to do the application and then apply for this program, which does recover some of the costs. Mm-hmm. Then at that point, and members, I'll also tell you that you might want to ask, well, how many jobs might that be in the state of Minnesota, in greater Minnesota, excuse me, and according to the fiscal note.
Ms. Babine, why don't you stay there?
We would be approaching about 400 jobs in the state of Minnesota based on what the appropriation is right now.
The Ford Award is 400 jobs on the $20 million.
For $10 million for each year, Mr. Chair. Unless I'm reading that wrong, maybe in my fiscal analysis, I might have to go to staff to ask clarification on that.
Mr. Chairman and members, the fiscal vote suggests that there would be about 400 jobs for $10 million because of the credit or the grant.
Mm-hmm. And while I ask Ms. Babine the question, could you do the math on that one? The cost of, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and the revenue generates $184,000, first page, mm-hmm. That's revenue fund.
Yep.
What's the cost, and so is that used to pay the cost of the two full-time employees, and that's why it only costs $5,000 and $12,000?
Mr. Chair, if you look on the second page of the preliminary fiscal note, you can see the expenditure formula, so the salary and benefits and the other operating costs, almost $184,000. Then it jumps with, as the years go out, almost 190, 195, 201. And so the difference that's reflected in the fiscal note is the difference against the revenue
formula.
Is the
formula. 5 and the 12.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, and Mr. Soderberg, did you do the math?
Well, we both.
Somebody did the math.
Mr. Okay. Chair, it's 25,000.
Okay.
Actually,
Mr. Muller, you had a question.
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to point that out.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Babine.
If I might speak to that, that's also reflected in the fiscal note. Under the expenditure and revenue formula, the expenditure I just spoke to, revenue is underneath that. The second bullet says, with the $10 million appropriation, if you look at the $27,144 annual salary, calculated in the bullet point above, it's about 368 applicants. Is that what you were referring to? Or the math we were looking at?
Thank you.
Yep. Okay.
Representative Ward, now it's listed in the, as I read the bill, it has a grant or credit. How is that going to work?
Mr. Chair, the employer has the ability to either receive their reimbursed for their expenses either through a grant from DEED after a year's training of the new employer or a lump sum, and that's at 90% of the costs, or get a tax credit on their taxes. So if they take a tax credit, It'll need to be through the Department of Revenue, which will have an account set up. Otherwise, it'll be a grant through DEED, over a 10-year period of the employer.
So I want to make.
So in other words, Mr. Chair, it'd be much easier for an employer to do it through the grant process rather than the tax credit process. But we want to make it available for both of them, to have both options available.
So is there an advantage, to other than just ease, to taking a grant versus a credit?
Mr. Chair, the grant is paid out at 90% versus 100% if it's a tax credit.
Okay. That's what my question was.
Okay.
All right. Seeing no other questions. Is there anyone that wanted to testify against this bill? Seeing no other questions and no other testifiers, would you like to renew your motion to be passed and recommended to pass to the Committee on Taxes?
So moved.
All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
This is you.